All right, team, welcome to another episode of the Wealth Lab podcast. You're here with Scott and Phil, and today we've got our chosen topics. I'm going to be talking about what to expect when talking to us. It's a very common question. What are you going to do? What are you going to talk to us about? I know I need to work with a financial planner, but can I trust you? So that's what I'm going to be, that's my chosen topic. Phil, what are you going to be going through today?
Yeah, awesome. Well, I just want to touch on debt. It's something that I find sort of maybe commonly misunderstood, or people don't really know how to approach it or attack it. So I'm going to have a quick chat about bad debt, okay debt, and possibly good debt.
Oh, okay. Looking forward to hearing about good debt. That's probably not something we hear that often about.
No.
So
no.
If you are listening to this podcast, if you're listening to this specific episode that you've clicked on it, you may have been recommended that you work with us. You may have had a colleague, you may have been connected via another professional. You're in your information phase. I just wanted to just touch on people who we're not a good fit for, because that's probably the best filter. We have a niche, and we do this because we work really well with people who are mid to late career professionals. If you are thinking about retirement, you've got a few years to get there, you're not quite sure what to do, you are the right person for us. We only work with what's referred to as pre-retiree accumulators, those people who are wanting to create a better retirement for themselves, and they need some help to get there. Everyone else, we don't work with. So that's the key point that I'll be really hammering today, which is we've got a number of systems and strategies that we use to help pre-retirees, which is mid to late career people. Let's say you're in your 40s, your 50s, maybe early 60s, and you just need some guidance. You need to make sure that you're well set up. That is who we work with best. So what I'm going to do is I'll just show you that this is a slideshow that we will sometimes take people through. This is the slides that we'll take you through. And I just wanted to really just touch on this one here. We all know that if you, the inertia, which is the thing, the easy thing to do nothing, but if we let that run over time, it becomes a hard thing, because if you just make no changes at all year on year on year on year, you get left behind. So alternatively, if someone does choose to engage with us, it's a hard thing to do. You need to trust that we're going to do the right thing. You've got to pay us as well. There's a fee to be engaged. But then over time, this gap here is really the difference. So why would I work with an advisor, or why would I work specifically with Wealth Lab? This is the gap right here. And that is doing the thing that's hard at the beginning, and then it becomes easy at the end because you've got more wealth, you've got more control, you understand it. Well, how do we actually do this? Well, I'll show you. We don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen with the financial markets. But what we do have is we have a consistent process that we use for people who are thinking about retirement, a number of years away from retirement, to optimize your finances. So a lot of people come to us just focusing on the super, and that is one element that we can focus on to make sure it's maximized, to make sure it's invested appropriately, to make sure the costs and fees are suitable. There's also some other areas. For example, what's happening with your lending? Do you have any other investments outside of super? Should you be contributing more? Should you be contributing less? Is there a range of different things we could be also considering? This is another element. We'll go through a budget. We'll look at your tax position. Are you optimizing this as best you possibly can? What does the insurance look like, your existing fund? Is it a drag? Is it taking money out take a lot of money out on a regular basis? Or is it an opportunity for us to cover the family a little bit more if you are a little bit exposed? What's happening with your property side of things? We can't recommend specific properties, but we can talk about it as an asset class. And then what happens to you if you pass away? This is an overall structure that we use to make sure that people are moving forwards, and it's consistent, and we know it works. I know I'm just going straight monologue here, Phil, so apologies, but no, I'll be done right. In a second, right? So let's just knock this one out. Here's just what I want to touch on here, avoiding mistakes. It's so common. It's such a hard thing to talk about as well. So people who engage an advisor in general, the chance of you making a mistake when it comes to your money is way, way less, okay? One of the things that people say is they'll agonize over what's the best possible investment for me, and they'll spend so much effort, so much energy on the best hypothetical investment there is that they make no changes whatsoever, and they just keep plodding along through the inertia. Working with us, working with an advisor is a great way to ensure that you don't make a financial mistake. you don't put all your money into a silly investment. And I'll give you an example. Some clients have come to us where they're at 100% in cash. So they've got all of their investments all in cash because I just don't know what to do with it. Alternatively, some people, they're 100% in property. They've got every single possible set they own in property. In both of those examples, there's not enough diversification. If there's a property market crash, if there's changes to legislation, if interest rates move, those portfolios will be really, really badly affected and probably not invested in line with the person's risk profile. So coming back to what it is that we do, we utilize a structure to make sure people are moving forwards, and then we consistently review the process on an annual basis. One of the things that I will touch on, so that's the process that we say. So why would you engage us? That's it. Consistency and a process. If you are considering working with us or an advisor, I'm going to give you some questions that you should also be thinking about. We don't have a crystal ball. We don't know where the future is going to hold. What we do have is a philosophy. We have an investment philosophy, and you should be asking us, what is your investment philosophy? And how does that align with my risk tolerance? That is the process that we'll take people through to make sure that the way that the types of investments that are available to you fit exactly what you need. Is that going to allow you to achieve your retirement goals? Is there changes we need to make? And how can we match our investment philosophy together? We can also talk about any conflicts of interest and what and how do you manage them. It's a very common thing that people are a little bit worried about. And if you should just verbalize it with us, so do you have any conflicts of interest? It's a perfectly fine question to ask. Mm-hmm. We have an ongoing register. All financial advisors must have a conflicts of interest register that can be available upon request. Yeah. And I think the final thing is that have you had any conflict with clients? Do you work with people in my specific scenario? Give me some examples. And has there been any a conflict with someone who's not been a right fit for you? And I think that's a great question as well, because it sets expectations for both parties, because it's a consultative process of me as the advisor or Phil as the advisor, as well as yourself as the person who needs advice. And there's nothing worse than having someone that we have had this before, which is someone that they don't like their existing advisor. They come to us, but they feel obligated because they're just not quite sure how to get away from them. Mm-hmm. Asking that question up front is really, really important and a great thing to do to make sure you're comfortable that the advice you're receiving is consistent, is in line with what your goals are, and that you can trust it, because that's what you want to do, because you just want to take it and then focus on other things, knowing that in the background, the advice is working for you.
Oof. Perfect.
That's good. My monologue.
Nice monologue. I like it.
Thank you.
Have you had any good questions from clients, or what do you reckon would be the best question that a client hit you with in an initial meeting to sort of sound you out a bit?
Well, first of all, I'll refer anyone to, if you go to the Money Smart Financial Advisors website, you can Google any advisor's name, and you can put that in. You can see their qualifications. So sometimes clients will come to us saying, "Well, is this your business?" And Phil and myself, we just work for an advisory business. So you can consider us like a lawyer or an accountant. We're not associated with any other large brand. There was Four Corners episode a number of years ago where there was thousands of financial planning firms with different names, but they were all affiliated with AMP. Now, AMP has had a history of charging dead people fees and having underperforming products and just generally not being great. And it's kind of quite difficult to understand the opacity of who actually owns this business and where is this advice coming from. So that's probably a question that I think is a good one to ask. I think probably a bad question to ask is, are you a scammer?
Yeah.
Because yeah. To be completely honest, if I was talking to a scammer, are they going to tell me yes?
No, you wouldn't think so. I mean, that's what I love about that, the financial advice register, though, because when people ask me, I mean, I've been asked that question, I mean, you know, who are you? How do I know you're not going to steal my money? Whatever. It's a completely independent government resource I can point people to that shows everything about me. So, yeah, I love it. Good resource.
You can see how long as well. So Phil first gave advice in 2011. I first gave advice in 2012. I was working as a paraplanner before that. So, you know, I've done more than both of us have done more than a decade in the industry, and you can actually see that in a government website.
Mm-hmm. History, so calls, banning orders, disqualifications, which there are none, spoiler alert.
What about you, Phil? What's a cracker of a question you've got?
Yeah, look, it probably is along those lines. I absolutely love that one. You know, how do I know you're legit? How do I know that you're an advisor? How do I know you're not going to pinch my money? And I think I'll probably get that question more being digital as well. I don't know if people seem, you know, face to face, I didn't get that question as much, but I actually think it's a great question. And I love that people do that due diligence. You know, I want a client that trusts me. And if that's what you need to go through to trust us and we can work together, yeah, I think it's a great question. And I love getting asked it.
And I feel like hopefully if you are listening to this podcast, you are doing your due diligence right now. And that's great that you've done that. I think one of the questions, like a bad question to ask would be, what's your investment performance? That's the wrong type of question, because we don't have a crystal ball and everyone's a little bit different. So everyone's account is different. So depending on your age, depending on your experience with investments, will dictate what the investment portfolios you have and will dictate the different types of returns. So say, for example, if you are a moderate investor with, say, 2 or 3 years left of your working life, your investment portfolio is going to look quite different to a 35, 38-year-old who has a super high income, no kids, and wants to swing for the fence. The two portfolios that we'll put together will have completely different returns, and specifically higher and lower returns. So not just what I say, like, the higher growth portfolio will have higher returns, but a lot more volatility. So it could be a plus 31 year or a minus 31 year. It would just be a wild ride. But because you've got the time to live out that time frame for the younger, more aggressive client, that will perform higher. But you just don't have to expose yourself to a thing such as sequencing risk or credit risk or market risk.
Yeah.
That's basically it. So hopefully that answers your question. If you are thinking of working with us, there's some good questions to ask us or prepare. And just get a sense on the types of people that we work with. I think, Phil, the final point is that as we're a digital business, we work with people right across the country.
Yeah,
and having the traditional model of, you know, an advisor 20Ks down the road, I'm not a fan of. I don't want my accountant to be near me. I just want the best accountant for me. Mm. I don't really mind where they are. It's likely in the future you will move or the advisor will move. And if that relationship is dictated on face-to-face advice, then it doesn't really work if you're not physically within the distance of each other. So as a purely digital business, should you be in Australia, should you even move overseas with your retirement, you'll still be able to work with us. And that's why we're set up to make sure that we can do that. So that might be another question to throw in to people as well.
Yep, 100%. And then besides all that, who wants to drive into the city and pay for parking and deal with traffic and everything just to come and have a chat to us when we can all do it from the comfort of our homes?
Yeah. It's like, couldn't this be an email? Has turned into, couldn't this be a Microsoft Teams call?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Last thing I want to do is haul off to see an accountant or something. It's no fun.
Just send me a text message and I'll be like, okay, fine, go.
Yep, done. Do it. Yeah.
All right. That's it. Phil.
Beautiful. Yeah. So debt, look, it's something that some people struggle with. Some people don't have a good handle on. Everyone's frightened of. So I thought I'd just talk through a few different debt-related concepts.
When you say debt, what do you mean? So just what do you mean by debt? Is that borrowing? That's getting money from other people. Yeah. That's just what you mean by debt.
Yep. Yeah. Money that you owe to people. Let's put it very simply. Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll kick off with the bad stuff. So, you know, I think there's a bit of a hierarchy of debt. Some of it's absolutely terrible. Some of it's not so bad. And some of it can actually be a positive if used right. So I'm going to start with the bad stuff first. So, you know, thinking about things like payday loans would be, you know, have to be right up there as the worst of the worst, generally very high interest, pretty nasty terms, easy money to get quite often. People can fall into a trap with that. Things like that, and personal loans, credit cards, carrying big balances on high interest credit cards, all that sort of stuff would fall into the category of what I would call pretty bad debt. And then you buy now pay later stuff, so some of that won't necessarily affect your credit rating because not all of them do a credit check, so it won't necessarily show in your file, but it's still something banks are going to look at. If you go down the, you know, if you've been hammering the afterpay and then you decide you want to go and buy a house, they're going to look at your bank statements. They're going to see it. And if it's a frequent thing that you're doing all the time, they're going to have questions. And they're especially going to have questions if you're paying your afterpay with your credit card. So, things to be mindful of. It's very easy to go for that quick, short win, but, think about the future impacts. If you are someone that has gotten yourself into a bit of a trap with a pile of high interest, not so great debt, personal loans, payday loans, whatever, what do you do about it? The best thing you're going to do is
help me, Phil. What do I do?
Yeah, well, get a good handle on your budget for a start and start working out what you can afford to duress and knocking those payments down. What can you sacrifice to get a bit of extra surplus income to start paying some of the debt down? And then I just thought I'd share, I stole this off the Investopedia website, so I'm not exactly the most creative fella. But this illustrates the point I wanted to get at, which is a couple of different strategies you can use for some of this stuff. So there's a common one that you'll see, you can Google, and there's a million resources about it out there, but debt avalanche versus debt snowball. Two distinct strategies to kill debt. So debt avalanche would be the process of ranking your debt by interest rate, highest to lowest, and attacking the highest interest debt first. So pay minimum repayments on everything except for your highest interest rate debt, which is where you would dedicate all surplus income to killing that, then move on to the next one, so on till it's all paid off.
So should we have a spreadsheet running for this? How would we? So should we have a spreadsheet of running of like what's an effective method that you've seen?
I love a spreadsheet. So that would be me. If it was me that was doing this, I would have a spreadsheet. I'd have everything ranked and I would just be chipping through it like that. Whatever works for you, I think, the best strategy is a strategy you can stick to. So if you're not a spreadsheeter, write it down, whatever, but have a record somewhere of the debt that you've got, what's outstanding, what the interest rates are, and work through it that way. Yeah. The other option is what they call a debt snowball. Sorry, go on.
So let's just be specific. So if you're listening to this and there's some debts, create a Google Drive, create something that you share with your partner so that you're both aware of the debts. If you are married, if you're a de facto, your partner's debt to your debt anyway, it's much better to just be clear and open with the money you owe than trying to hide anything. And then just follow either the avalanche or snowball process, rank them, and then on a regular basis, identify and update that sheet.
Nutshell. So the difference between the avalanche and the snowball is then instead of ranking by interest rate, we're ranking by balance. And you're going to go smallest balance to highest balance, attack the smallest balance first, and then move on. So when you're deciding which one might be right for you, if you're someone that's very disciplined, can manage your cash flow well, and can stick to the strategy, debt avalanche is probably going to be the thing that you might consider because generally it will save you the most interest over time because you're attacking your higher interest first. But if you're someone that's racked up a lot of consumer debt, you're probably not that disciplined person and you're probably going to need a bit of motivation, which is where the debt snowball can be a great option because you're seeing stuff get knocked off really quickly. It helps you keep your momentum up and power through. So, just depends. It's a bit of a psychological play, the debt snowball. As I said, the best strategy is the strategy you're going to be able to stick to. So think about your own circumstances, your own attitude, and you'll be able to work out which way is the best to go. That's on the nasty stuff. Not so bad debt. Look, home loan, necessary evil. There's not too many people out there that can save 800 grand to go and buy a property outright. So, most people are going to be looking at a mortgage at some point in their life. It's just the standard stuff. You mentioned inertia earlier. It's easy to just leave things the way they are. Banks absolutely love inertia. They love clients that take out a mortgage and never look at it again. So, best thing you can do there, consistently challenge your bank on rate, shop around. Don't let inertia have you paying an extra tax to your bank just because you've been too lazy to look around. So, hot tip on the mortgage. And also seek advice, not always, everyone will attack their mortgage because we've been told get rid of debt. It's not always the best solution. Sometimes, maybe we're better off looking at superannuation contributions or something, other investments. There could be other ideas. There could be other things that for your circumstances may work better. So I would say that don't just accept the fact that you've got to smash your mortgage as quickly as possible as a foregone conclusion. Speak to an advisor. There may be other options that may actually be better for your wealth building and your long-term retirement plans. So, there's no one size fits all strategy for anyone. I think that's something that you should talk to an advisor about. And finally, I know we're probably running out of time here, so I'll talk pretty quickly, but just to throw a bit of a weird one out there, but there is some debt. When I sort of talk about good debt, it's investment debt that's generating an income, building an asset, and that debt is tax deductible. That can be debt that could be used to help build for your future, help grow for your future, and may actually help you get where you want to go. Again, something to speak to an advisor about. Those kind of strategies are not for everybody. They can be complex, they can be risky, but they can also be rewarding. So something to talk about. And the final point is using debt to pay down debt. Bit of a counterintuitive one. There's things like debt recycling strategies. You start to, as you pay down your home mortgage, you can start to access some of that equity to build an investment portfolio, to generate more income, to pay your mortgage down quicker. So that, for the right person in the right circumstances, can be a pretty powerful strategy to pay your mortgage quicker, but also build an investment at the same time. So again, that's something that piques your interest, definitely something to speak to an advisor about. Don't just accept the fact that you've got to pay your mortgage for 30 years. Have a chat. There's probably stuff we can do.
Good stuff. Love it.
I'll keep it there because we could go right into a rabbit hole with that and we'd be here for an hour. So.
That's it. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We are back in the next fortnight. And if you've got any questions, send it in. Thanks, Phil. Have a great week.
Beautiful. Thanks, mate. You too. Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.